A logo in red and blue letters. Magnolia Pictures. Embark Productions appears in white letters on a black background. A man with a stethoscope listens blankly to a woman.
When I came home from the clinic, everyone was asleep. Normally, they'd hear my truck. We live in the middle of nowhere, so I parked it about a half a mile down the road, and I walked home, but my boyfriend heard. He hears everything. When we came in to see what was wrong, I just tried to pretend to be asleep, but I couldn't hold it in. And I started to cry.
There are anatomical drawings behind him.
Go on.
Sorry. I was bawling my eyes out, and he held me. And I wished I hadn't done it. I wished it was still inside me, and it was still alive. Mm-hmm. I've got four of them now. I don't know why, but when I make love, I can't feel anything.
Shh.
Sometimes I think, well...
He's wearing a white coat and making notes.
I can't really see a reason to keep trying. To keep going.
The young medic stares impassively at the woman, then makes notes on the clipboard.
Aren't you supposed to say something? And I just told you I'm thinking about killing myself. I have no reason to live.
He stares at her, then makes more notes.
Yeah.
Other people are watching.
I think a prescription of Paxil might be the right prescription.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anything else, Peter?
The dark-haired young medic, Peter, looks vacantly at a man making notes at the front of a class.
Hmm?
Oh, can't feel anything. No reason to keep going.
Paxil. Really? All right, Sandra, you're up next.
Okay. Humboldt County. Copyright 2007 Humboldt Films, LLC. All rights reserved. Peter, wearing a sweater vest over a blue shirt, ambles along a stark corridor, with his hands in his trouser pockets. He's sitting on the corridor floor when a door opens.
He said you should go in now.
Oh, thanks.
He's a bit of a curmudgeon, isn't he?
He's not so bad.
She was the patient.
I have something for you. Here.
Peter!
Later, alligator.
She hands him a piece of yellow paper. Peter's now in the office of the man who was in class.
This is an acceptance into one of the best residency programs in the country. I was hoping this meeting would be a celebration. But I have to fail you.
What? I can try harder. It's just I've been studying nonstop. I haven't slept in 3 days. I'm doing rounds. I'm a little...
If today's exam had been real, You would have put a life in danger. And although I believe you could make a great doctor, I have my own moral imperative.
But Dad, if I fail, I won't graduate. I'll lose the residency.
Peter, we worked so hard for this. I'm unbelievably disappointed.
Peter's in a men's room and studies the acceptance letter.
Congratulations.
He angrily screws the letter into a ball and stuffs it into his mouth as he looks at himself in a mirror above a sink. He looks awkward when an elderly guy comes out of a cubicle and washes his hands. The guy glances at him, then dries his hands and goes. Peter slowly spits out the paper ball.
Idiot.
Peter's now sitting on a bench at a bus stop in a busy street, and opens the folded yellow paper he was given. It's a flyer announcing Jazz Tonight with the lovely and talented Miss Bogart Truman. He's wearing earbuds and ponders as music plays. Later, he watches the woman who played the patient singing in a club. Peter gives her an awkward little wave. She beams at Peter, who nods and smiles tightly. Peter applauds.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
She bows and directs the audience applause toward the double bass player, then gets down off the stage. She moves her hips and shoulders to the beat as she sashays past tables in the dimly lit room, and comes to sit on a bar stool beside Peter. She gives him a questioning look, and he responds with a faint approving nod, then watches the band. When he turns back, she tilts her head and smiles, then winks at him and leaves. He runs out after her into a dark alley.
That place was too noisy. Puts my brain in such a huff.
She pulls back a sliding metal gate to an elevator, and they step in. As the graffiti-covered elevator ascends, Peter steals a glance at her, but quickly stares ahead when she looks at him. She's aware of it and smiles. She comes into a room, switches on a lamp, and covers the shade with a diaphanous scarf. Peter stands nervously in the doorway, then hangs a Do Not Disturb sign outside. She undresses him.
So, you're an actress or a singer or something?
Those are just little gigs when I'm coming through LA. You seem so sad.
My name's Peter Hadley.
Hi, Peter Hadley. I'm Bogart.
Is that your real name?
No. You're trapped.
Sorry. I should tell you, I've never really, how to put this? I don't really have any money.
Do you take checks?
Oh wow!
Oh my God!
Peter Hadley! Oh my, wow!
That's terrible.
Oh my God!
Oh Peter Hadley. I'm sorry.
Man, oh man. Can't a girl just have casual sex anymore without being labeled some kind of a...
No. Yes. Yes, casual sex.
Yay.
Eight things to each other. I just didn't think you were actually interested.
Peter Hadley.
Sorry.
You're just not too good with people yet, are you?
What do you...
She sits beside him on the bed and pushes him backwards as she kisses him. The screen goes black. Later, she puts on boots.
What are you doing?
Going for a drive.
Where are you going?
Going home. Want to come with me?
They're now in her car.
Are you sure you want to come?
Huh?
It's a long drive. Are you sure you want to come?
Yeah.
Okay, do you need anything?
No.
Okay.
She sets off and Peter, who's half asleep, squints at his cell phone. In a large house, his father, Professor Hadley, checks a message. The message reads, "Dad won't be home tonight. Talk tomorrow. Love, Peter." His dad rubs his face and looks fed up.
And is that enough?
Peter is fast asleep as Bogart drives him.
I bet you feel really potent stuff.
A golden dawn turns into a sunny day as Peter carries on sleeping, and they speed through ever-changing countryside.
Turn out are typically gray, but even the stop clock on your wall is right two times a day.
Pastureland and vines give way to forested hills. Peter stirs briefly, then drifts off to sleep again with his mouth open.
Just how much distance means we're
some distance after they pass a sign for Humboldt County, Peter's eyes open blearily. The car is stopped and he looks toward Bogart, then seems a touch confused. He wipes condensation off the windshield, stares out joylessly, then undoes his seatbelt. He gets out into dull daylight and scans around.
Bogart?
He passes bushes, then heads up a steep rocky path toward a ridge, and checks his watch as he goes. On the other side of the ridge, Peter looks out at gently undulating ocean, dotted with rocky outcrops. The sun glows amid pinky gray clouds, and casts a streak of golden light on the water. Peter follows a sandy path along a narrow headland which juts out into the sea and joins Bogart staring out over the water.
Where are we?
Oh.
Is this Malibu?
No.
Bogart's now driving fast.
They call this the Lost Coast. Won't be lost for much longer, though. I can tell you, Walmart is marching in.
Oh, God!
Are we chasing someone?
And don't be fooled by the whole, you know, peace, love, nature, hippie, you know, spirit thing. People that have moved here take the business of marijuana very serious, you know?
Wait, marijuana? Like drug pushers?
Drug pushers? No, growers, farmers, you know. And not me. I got out. Here, grab the wheel for a second.
I think that's a...
You're fine. You're good. Thank you.
Should you be smoking while we're...
Oh, yeah, believe me. I need it. It's all gravy in the Navy.
She looks stoned as they zoom along a leafy sun-dappled track. Day turns to night, and Bogart's truck headlights flare as she pulls up.
Are you ready?
For...
She takes the keys, gets out, and leaves him in darkness.
Bogart?
Hello?
His image is shadowy as he gets out.
Bogart?
He walks through pitch blackness. Figures appear in a pool of light on the track ahead, which leads to a house.
Bogart? Oh, God.
Fuck you!
Oh, God.
Fuck you, motherfucker!
Jack, put down the fucking gun!
What is going on here?
Oh, Rosie's roses were so beautiful this year. They were just beautiful.
They were gorgeous.
And then this little cocksucker deer.
What is it, Jack?
Jack, whose hair is in a ponytail, aims his rifle and stares keenly along the barrel. He suddenly lowers the gun and fumes when a figure moves among trees.
How many times have I told you not to sneak up on us like that? Now you march yourself out here right now, little miss!
God damn it, Jack! You could have killed her!
Sorry, Grandpa. I was just playing. Oh, Annabelle!
Oh, God. You are getting so big. I can't carry you. Where's your daddy? Come on in, sidewalk boy.
Inside, Peter sits po-faced in clouds of smoke. He wafts smoke away as Bogart and a bearded guy, Max, cross the softly lit room laughing. Earl, a guy wearing a hippie headscarf, arrives, and Jack passes a joint around as another guy gives him a bag of pot. Earl sits with Jack and produces a fistful of bills for him.
How are you? Good God.
Peter mutters and stares at a slogan on Earl's sweatshirt, Michi was peachy, then talks to the granddaughter who's pretending to be a cat.
Are you a kitty cat?
Peter watches everyone glumly as they laugh and get high. Rosie comes up to him with a plate of food.
Oh, no, thank you.
Putting dogs on leashes is a goddamn shame. Think about it. Dogs. Wild animals. But it isn't just that we put these beautiful creatures on leashes that really pisses me off. It's the completely frightening fact that we have created an environment, a world, where if we don't put the dogs on the leashes, they'll walk into the street and get killed by a car. 2-ton slabs of metal hurtling at high speed down a concrete path. Those aren't supposed to exist in nature. They aren't natural. Natural. Fuckers. You should try some of Texas City,
Andrew. I'm fine.
He refuses a toke of Rosie's joint and she drifts away laughing. Bogart and Max are snuggled up with the granddaughter, smoking a bong. Peter heads toward them, but is stopped.
Hey, sweater vest. You want a Bogart Strays?
Yeah.
Yes? Nice. You know, you're nothing special.
Thank you. I keep that in mind.
You know, she might not want to talk to you.
You guys, you go easy on him.
Just saying hello.
Hey, Bogey, haven't seen you in a while. How's it going?
Bogart?
You're looking very humble, Steve-o.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So what's been going on with you guys?
You know, Bogart. Usual shit. We're fixing up the place. We got an HDTV. It's huge. It's fucking monstrous.
Listen,
we were also going together with Max on an ATV this summer.
I'm not going to do shit with you guys.
All right, well, you must be saving up for something, right? Haven't seen you in town much, Max.
Can I have a word?
You know, fellas, I've been busy. It's been busy. Excuse me.
Busy, yeah, whatever. Well, anyway, you guys, hey, listen, we got a new sound system. You guys want to check it out?
We got a subwoofer.
Yeah, dude, this thing is awesome.
Pardon me, Bogart?
It's huge. It's got like four speakers, and, it gets down to Bogart? The bass. It's really...
It's a subwoofer.
Right, it's a subwoofer.
Subwoofer?
Yeah, let's check it out.
Come on. How many speakers?
Bogart!
I need to go home.
Stone faces stare at him.
Ah, oh, here we go.
The lights have gone out and Jack lights an oil lamp.
Jenny's gone.
Listen, I'll give you a ride to the bus stop in the morning, okay?
Daddy, good night.
Charity, honey, can you show Peter where he can play?
Peter and Max's daughter Charity stare at each other.
I'll follow you.
It's a little hard to see. I'm sorry.
Hey, why do they call your mom Bogart?
She's not my mom.
Oh.
Because she Bogarts the pot.
She...
A verb which means to hold instead of pass.
You shouldn't know about all this stuff.
What stuff?
All the marijuana.
It's just a plant.
Yeah, but you're so young.
I think it's nicer than beer.
He puts his head in his hand.
You're funny.
Where is your mother?
She died a long time ago.
Oh. So, Bogart...
She's kind of like my aunt. Her parents left, so my grandma and grandpa adopted her when she was little. My daddy and her have sex.
Wow.
They say it's okay to have sex with other people, but I don't think they really mean it.
Yeah.
Did you have sex with Bogart?
I don't feel comfortable talking.
Okay. So do you want me to read you a book?
He smiles and nods.
What do you have?
Ooh, here's my favorite. How about The Closing of the American Mind?
That'll do.
Okay.
You should help me with my crop.
How much are you growing?
How much? A lot? More than a lot? No, but look, I got a system, okay?
Max, no! You know that a big crop is messy. Oh, you know that people notice.
You sound like fucking Jack.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Babe, once I get this harvest done, and Charity, she'll have a real home. I'm gonna farm legal crop, I swear to you.
Sounds good, baby, it does, but...
But what?
What would I do? Where would I stay?
Stay with me.
A fire blazes beside them.
No.
He's on top of her with his face close to hers.
Why not?
Because.
Because why?
He gets up impatiently.
Man, it's this place. It's beautiful, Max, but it's a fucking trap. I can't be here.
So what are you gonna do? Go to another city and sing a few more songs until you pick up another little parasitic fuck? What is that guy? What's his name again?
Peter. His name's Peter.
Oh, you know his name. That's
interesting. You know his name?
Because normally you don't even know his fucking name.
Why are you doing this?
Why am I doing what? Asking you to stay? Trying to figure out once and for all why you won't, or you don't, or you can't.
Max gives a resigned smile, then drops his head. Bogart grabs his chin, lifts his face and kisses him. Pale moonlight falls among trees in the still night. In the house, Peter's fast asleep in bed, as Rosie gently tucks him in, then creeps out, taking his oil lamp to light her way. The bedroom falls into darkness as she leaves, and Peter sleeps on peacefully. Downstairs, Jack's asleep in a chair, with his fingers loosely curled around a bottle and a magazine on his lap. He stirs as Bogart gently takes them and puts them aside. She lays her head on his chest and hugs him, and he nuzzles her sleepily with his cheek. He strokes her head, and remains with his whiskery cheek against her dark hair. They stare ahead in the soft glow of an oil lamp, then Bogart gets up. Jack watches her pensively, as she heads across the cluttered but homey room. Day has dawned over the pretty timber house, and Peter's still sleeping peacefully.
Hey! Hey, get up! Get up, they shot him!
The drugs!
Man, they're all dead. We gotta get the fuck out of here. The drugs, man, we're fucked.
Oh my god,
fuck!
Oh my god!
Peter. Charity's covered in ketchup.
Judy!
Max and Charity run out of the room.
What do you mean she's gone?
Like the wind.
She rarely stays for more than a night. Child of humble God, I can't leave or can't stay. I might have pissed her off a little.
Is she coming back?
She's coming back. But she might, yeah, she'll be back in like a week or a year.
10 years.
10 years?
No service.
Fuck. Fuck!
Oh, sorry.
Charity gives Peter the landline.
Thank you. These two burn?
I didn't really like them burn, so I don't know.
Voicemail. Hi, Dad. It's Peter Hadley. I'm, right now, I'm, this is funny. You're gonna think this is really funny, but, so you see, there was this...
He slams down the phone, buries his face in his hands, then makes another call.
Yeah. I think that's good. They're toasty now.
Dad, it's me, Peter, again. Listen, I'm, Well, listen, I know there's some way to sort this all out, and I'm going to handle it. And I don't want you to worry. I've just got to get back to L.A., see, right now I'm in the middle of...
Banana?
Of the, well, it's like I was saying, there was... Okay, I've really got to get out of here.
I'll take you to town when I get back from the store.
No, you don't understand, I...
Be back in a half hour. Stay put. Eat up, Charity.
At the store, Max heaves a plastic sack onto his shoulder, puts another under his arm, and heads off. At the house, Peter tentatively opens a door, and is faced with a wall of pot growing outside.
Oh, God. Oh, this is illegal. I'm in a house of crazy people.
He looks at an illegible sign on another door beside him, knocks and enters.
Mr. Truman? Jack?
Obviously I can hear you, must I acknowledge?
I can't seem to find the bathroom.
Jackson is den. An outhouse is nestled among leafy trees. One side is totally open and reveals Peter, sitting on the toilet with his trousers around his ankles, staring ahead fixedly. Max pulls up in his pickup truck at the side of a sunny forest road. Peter's with him.
Why are we stopping?
Jack said he saw some tweakers. Just want to check on my plants. Stay here. Be right back.
Max? Max? We gotta get to the bus station.
Max goes behind a trailer, then reappears with gloves.
Max. Max, the bus leaves.
Patience, virtue, etc., etc.
Max crosses the narrow road and hurries off in the dense undergrowth. Peter watches him go and looks helpless. Later, he sits surveying a load of junk outside the ramshackle trailer. Max, now wearing a do-rag, is fixing up equipment in the forest.
Fuck.
Meanwhile, Peter idly inspects the junk and throws a circular piece of metal aside. Sunlight filters through the canopy of tall trees as Peter sits waiting, then springs to his feet when Max returns.
Where have you been?
Oh, shit.
It is light. It is light. Say, this business. I mean, it's very unpredictable. I'm on call too.
Can we go? I gotta get to the bus station.
I'm filled with guilt about this one. I really am.
You missed the last bus.
What?
Not a lot of options here.
It's cold.
I missed the bus.
Not a lot of options here.
Oh, Jesus.
I would have been back sooner, man, but ran into an irrigation issue. Problematic.
I missed the bus.
It's just for a day, man.
Now, you don't understand, okay? It's not just a day. I can't afford to waste any more time here. I need to get back and get things in order.
Dad, right maybe away. You should have thought about that earlier before you came up north. But that Bogart, a lot of temptation. Hey, road's right there. You're more than welcome to throw up a thumb.
Okay. I will.
Max taps him lightly with a metal baseball bat he's picked up, then flops down onto the chair amid the junk. Peter walks to the edge of the empty winding road, stares solemnly along it and mutters to himself.
It's only a day.
He sighs and turns back.
It's only a day.
Max sees him trudging through the undergrowth, stands up, and throws him the bat.
You're here for the night, right? This is good. That irrigation issue. It's a two-man job. I could use you. Uh-huh. I can't exactly
take an ad out in the paper. I don't know. Helping with a marijuana plantation.
You can't live your entire life by the books. Can you?
Later, Peter has removed his sweater vest and is kneeling on the ground, joining two small pipes with water gushing out of them. When he's finished, he buries the pipes under dried leaves. Max is smoking a joint when he hears Peter make an animal call. Max laughs and responds.
Easy.
Peter slip-slides down a slope to sit beside him.
Is this your marijuana garden? How many are there?
A half dozen. Enough to get by.
At Jack and Rosie's.
White rape and slave owning motherfuckers. You hear me?
I do.
That's what they are. I don't have no time to be bothered with raping, slave owning motherfuckers.
Should someone get...
They got a monopoly at the general store. Ain't no different from fucking Walmart. Except it's in my goddamn backyard.
Bob and Steve is here.
They coming. They coming, baby. They coming to build their hotels and their houses, the gas stations, the traffic. They coming from the Beverly Hills mansions. They gonna rape the land, they gonna rape the women. They're gonna rape my fucking asshole.
But what's wrong with some development? I mean, a lot of these homes are very poorly constructed.
Fuck off and die.
Everybody gapes when Steve and his buddy Bob come in with bloody faces. Jack stands up.
What happened?
Peter looks alarmed.
Did they leave anything?
No.
Not one.
Do you have enough money to last you?
A couple months.
Well, you can certainly clip for us in the fall.
It's the feds raping every last plant right out of the earth.
It wasn't the feds.
We were robbed, Zelda. They fucking hit me with a gun barrel.
They jacked our fucking plants.
Mm-hmm. Fucking
the feds don't just run into your patch with a gun and just fucking pistol whip you.
Solids and liquids are differentiated one from another by the way the material responds to stress. If the material deforms, stays deforms, or springs back when the stress is removed, it's a solid. Instead, the material flows when stressed and rearranges itself in such a way as to remove the stress. It's a liquid. In the past, there's been too many secrets, too much espionage. We're gonna have to adapt if we expect to survive.
Steve takes an ice pack away from his head, and Peter's eyes dart to the somber faces around him. Peter walks through the house in darkness, and stops when he notices a light shining under Jack's den door, which is open a crack. He enters the cluttered den, where a small desk lamp casts light on a jumble of papers strewn over the desktop. Peter picks up a piece of crumpled paper with jottings on it.
Have I gone insane and completely forgotten inviting you in here?
Sorry, I went out to pee and,
get the fuck out.
Right.
He watches Peter hurry away, then breaks into a smile. In dull daylight, Jack gets out of his truck as he and Peter drop Charity off at a school deep in the forest.
Have an edifying day at school.
Jack and Charity blow kisses, and he staggers backwards as if hers has hit him.
Bonjour, Jack.
Ah, ça va, Lucy.
We were wondering whether you or Max would be contributing to the pencil patch this year.
Both, actually. Lord willing.
Grand merci. We are very grateful.
Glad to do our part.
Excuse me. Children, allez, vite, en place.
The pencil patch?
A while back, a bunch of us got tired driving our kids 50 miles to school. So we built this place, funded annually by the parents of the children that we tend. One or two plants. Pencil patch.
Thank God. My father heard that, I think his head would explode.
The complexities of the modern father-son relationship. Hadn't changed much.
Well, you and Max seem to get on pretty well.
It's complicated, Captain. But I guess we haven't reached the event horizon yet.
The event horizon?
Event horizon is the point around a black hole where nothing beyond that point can escape, even light. My point is it's your big kahuna point of no return.
If you had crossed it, that event horizon, how would you know?
Because you would be ripped apart molecule by molecule. You're still intact, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah.
Lucy sounds the school bell. Later, Max finds Peter staring up at a tree.
Oh, hey, you ready to go to the bus station?
Peter turns away as Max pees.
cruder control, Slick.
Oh, yeah.
Helped protect the plants. Why don't you do that side over there? Oh, these buds. Oh, my God. Beautiful.
Max stands with his trousers down around his knees and his arms spread wide as he sprays the sun-dappled forest. Peter undoes his fly, then spreads his arms and pees. Later, Max smokes a joint and Peter eats watermelon.
How long have you been smoking that?
Went into my mom's stash when I was 8 or 9.
When I was 8, I was drinking Kool-Aid and watching the Smurfs.
You have your drugs, I have mine.
As Peter considers, Max watches him, takes a long toke on his joint, and inhales without blowing out the smoke.
Let me see that. What, it's medicine, right?
It's just a flower, man. Go for it.
Max hands him the joint. Peter holds it awkwardly and looks unsure what to do with it. He sniffs it, then tentatively takes a puff and blows out the smoke. He nods and removes tobacco from his lips.
It's not so bad.
You gotta hold it into your lungs.
Peter draws on the joint again, holds the smoke in, and tries to stifle a splutter. He passes the joint back.
You don't cough, you don't get off.
Am I supposed to feel something now? Because I don't feel anything. Which is strange, because once inhaled, that THC should travel throughout the bronchial tree, bathing the brain and vital organs within seconds. I should feel something, shouldn't I? I don't feel high. Am I high? I don't feel high.
A glazed look enters Peter's eyes. Sunlight filtering through the giant redwood trees they're sitting beneath falls on Peter's face.
The sun.
He closes his eyes and smiles.
I don't feel high.
He lies back slowly, and the leafy canopy above him spins gently. Later, they cross a forest stream.
Don't you worry about the police?
The local pigs? No way, man. The feds, they're the ones to worry about. They come later. During harvest, man, these motherfuckers, they're funded. They got helicopters and
spotter planes,
ex-special forces. They came a few years back.
I had enough plants, maybe 10 or so, just to get by. Pay my rent, make sure I get charity some new school clothes, woo, books and shit. But, you know, that's usually enough to do it. Small plants, no problem, but that wasn't the case this time. They came flying in, you know? I mean, the feds, they want the big crops, right? So they can report that shit on the news. But they came flying in, circling around, man. They give you the death circle. If you get the death circle, then, you know, you gotta run like hell. Go down to the beach, go down to the beach, you wait it out. And hopefully, when you get back, your crops are still there. You just run to the beach?
Well, the feds, they just want the plants, man. If you're not around when they take them, then you skip the jail part. And that's when I lost everything, man. I lost everything. I moved into the trailer. I had to move Charity in with Jack and Rosie. And that's the deal. I tell you, the people around here, they don't have a plan, you know? And I'm not in it for the HDTV. Oh, what a fucking lazy boy, you know? I mean, I'm taking care of my own.
Max, I forgot about the bus.
Bus.
Charity's a world of beauty. She's a natural. You're in first to Mars.
Really?
Mars? Oh, God, Jesus.
Graham's gonna call a nice Mars.
What, like the planet?
It's an important project. Practically speaking, you're going to have to terraform the planet, right? And the best way to do that, I don't know any other way to say it, you've got to shit outside. Step outside the dome and shit. You see, we do it here all the time. It's no big deal. The outhouse is busy. You just shit outside.
Will that take a long time?
Yes, Peter, it will take a long time, which is exactly why I'm...
Jack, we're talking about colonizing a fucking planet here. It's a process.
The world wasn't built in a day, Jack. It's a process.
Over time, multiple generations, it will make a difference.
Couldn't you just poo inside the dome and have plumbing pipes pump the poo outside?
He said poo.
Yes. Yes, you could. You're a part of the project, Peter. You're in. Yes, that's great.
You've been talking about Mars for years. This boy listens for 1 minute and alters the entire plan.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay. Here's part two of the plan. You tell people, okay, you can come to Mars, be one of the first to colonize it, but you have to work long enough for a certain amount of time to be determined, and then you get a plot of land. You get to own a part of Mars.
Anybody can do this.
What about criminals?
We'll allow criminals.
And what exactly is a criminal?
Mars will be a place for people to have an entirely new start. Totally fresh. Wouldn't that be just lovely? We're not gonna fuck this one up. You know, we'd probably not allow murderers and rapists, but if you just stole a little something...
Candy bar, a kidney.
Mars would welcome you.
That woman is out of her mind. Out of her mind. I'm going to tell you this. If that woman ever gets to Mars, you can forget about the planet. We will have to just move on to Venus.
Well, Charlie used to love the idea.
This one, right here, that's a whole different story. This one should be leader of the expedition. What do you say? Mayor of Mars.
Well, I accept.
Jack plays piano and Rosie sings.
You may not romance or try to be smooth, but that don't matter to me. It's the loving I feel when he looks in my eyes. There's no other love but you. When you're far away, love, you still somehow stay, love.
In soft lamplight, Charity gets up from lying on the couch with Max and extends a hand to a chilled-looking Peter, who dances with her as she sings.
Others may try to loan me their hearts, but they just would never do. You've got my tender soul on a string. There's no other love but you. Happy to be lazy, dreaming on that hazy. They will be pushing daisies. Me and my little crazy. Time tumbles on and memories fade, but this deal will always be true.
Rosie's singing to Jack.
Oh, I am your girl, and you are my man. There's no other love but you.
They kiss.
Yeah. Very nice. You're a great
kid. In the back of Max's pickup, Charity is lying between her dad and Peter, as they all stare up at the night sky. Peter's wearing a relaxed smile, and contemplates a twinkling array of stars piercing the inky blackness. Time passes and a sequence of images includes Max and Peter strolling through a sunny cornfield and chilling outside Max's trailer. Peter has swapped his conservative clothes for jeans, t-shirt, and bare feet. On another occasion, Max sits on the ground smoking a bong, while Peter lurches around and shoots hoops with a watermelon. In the forest, he joyously spreads his arms as he and Max spray their pee around. At the trailer, Peter's stoned and sitting on the ground with Max.
Esophageal gastroduodenoscopy!
In a field, they sit watching the sunset. At night, Charity lies snuggled up to her dad in the back of his truck. Peter's beside them, and smiles as Max teases his daughter. Walking along the street with Max in daylight, Peter stops to study his disheveled reflection in a shop window. A golden sun, fringed with pale pink, sheds a glowing strip of light on ocean. Peter and Max are sitting by a clump of trees, looking out over a deserted beach to the water. Peter takes a deep breath and beams.
Are we sitting idly?
What?
What we're doing, right now. Would you consider it sitting idly?
I suppose.
Max lights a pipe.
My father never let me sit idly.
Must be a productive fucking guy, your dad.
Yeah. My mother couldn't stand it. She left when I was 5. Yeah, he'd literally say that. You cannot sit idly. There's too much life to live, James.
James?
It's my middle name, Peter James.
My middle name is the... Have a serious.
No, you're not. Your parents named you Max the Truman?
No, my given middle name is Forrest, but I changed it. Legally. When I was 11 years old, I was obsessed with Alexander the Great. Couldn't leave it alone, so I told him I was old enough to make my own decisions, and goddamn if they didn't let me do it.
That's awesome.
No, it's not. It's fucking stupid. Just told me to shut the fuck up.
They glance at each other, and Max rests his head back pensively on the tree he's propped up against. In forest, Peter lays a line in a narrow, shallow trench, then scrapes soil over it and pats it down. At Jack and Rosie's, Peter eats heartily as the family have dinner.
This is very good.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Your recipe. I'll take it to school.
So... are we enjoying our summer here amongst the lotus eaters, Captain?
Jack looks pointedly at a leaf on Peter, who brushes it off.
Oh. Bob and Steve is here.
Okay.
So when this is over, what next?
When this is all over?
Hey ho, Professor!
More!
You're a professor, was. Of what?
Physics, of course. As UCLA fascists still wish Jack would come back and publish the work that he and Charlie...
UCLA? I go... went to UCLA.
University life is a complete distraction. We needed isolation and a place to focus. When this work is finished, the whole world will change.
And you just left and came up here? When?
Fuck, it's been 25 years.
I need to get away from stuff.
Who wants more?
Yeah,
me.
Peter, Steve, and Bob are in the lager bar in town.
I'm not
staying here. I'm not giving up. I mean, this is just temporary.
You tell him, Pete.
I mean, who does that? Seriously, just abandons the world, comes here, just stays?
Jack, Rosie, is it you?
Yeah.
Also me. Yeah. And other than that, just about everybody. Everybody up here.
How'd you end up here?
Same as you. Follow the girl.
I didn't really follow a girl, my friend.
I didn't really follow the same girl then.
Wait. You mean Bogart?
You mean Bogart?
Really? No shit.
Yeah.
You too?
I'm native.
Hey, Sophie, you by yourself tonight?
Of course not.
Of course you aren't. She fucking bark at her, Steve.
All right, let's get the fuck out of here.
I'm not fucking going.
Whoa.
Those are the fuckers that probably robbed our patch.
Those guys? You think so?
I didn't tell anybody but Sophie where that fucking patch was.
You gonna say anything?
I'm gonna say something.
You're not gonna fucking say anything.
When I'm ready, I could say something now if I wanted
to. This is wrong.
I will say it when I'm ready.
Excuse me, gentlemen. Did you steal their plans? Yeah, Skipper, I'm talking to you. Did you steal their plans?
Yes, your question.
I'm serious, Mr. Lumberjack man. I know you were raised in a barn, but you can't just go around stealing people's livelihood because, you know, it's cowardly.
Peter throws his drink in a guy's face and runs off with Steve and Bob. Three guys chase them, but they drive off.
No.
The perfect argument against cloning.
No.
That guy.
No. Look,
stop.
He did.
Shut the fuck up. I was up here the other day. There's something you've got to see. Come here. Shh.
They follow Bob to a large pot patch in forest.
Oh, my God.
What the fuck is this?
Shh. Keep quiet. How many are there?
Must be hundreds here, man. Some lucky fucking bastard is set.
Hey, we should take a few.
Fuck, you think so?
Why not? That'll save our asses.
I mean, there's so many here, I don't think anyone would notice.
All right, let's fucking do it.
Hey, why is there a sleeping bag here?
Run! Don't move!
They sprint through undergrowth.
I can't fucking see, man! Fuck! Bob! Downhill!
Peter stops running and gapes.
No, come on! Please, go!
What the fuck? What the fuck?
Always a huge patch.
What the fuck are you doing? Are you kidding me?
Were those all yours too?
What are you fucking doing?
Max, I had no
Stay idea. The fuck away! Get out of here!
Max, I didn't know.
Get the fuck out of here! Stay away from my fucking plants!
Wooded hills and valleys lead down to ocean, shimmering with silvery moonlight. Peter creeps into Jack's to find him sitting in his chair beside a glowing oil lamp.
How many does he have?
Sorry?
Don't be sorry. Just answer the question. How many does he have?
How many?
Sit down, Pete. This herb has been a part of human civilization since before it was civilized. Hemp fibers have been found in archaeological digs in the Asiatic communities in China dating back 4,000 BCE. Taoist monks in the 5th century thought it could tell the future. But it is currently illegal. I've lost too many friends over it. Good people, not thieves, murderers, just people like you and me. Now, since the Mexicans have been coming across the border, the feds have shifted their resources to them, their cartels, growing plants in the thousands, armed guards, guns. Compared to them, we're nothing more than mom and pop shops. But that does not mean that we can do what we want. It's a foolish man who underestimates its enemies. It is a stupid man who underestimates the feds.
Jack rolls a large joint.
Listen, herald of the dawn. Let's go greet it, shall we?
They walk through sunny forest.
We live off the grid, harmoniously within the systems of the earth, and we endeavor to improve this beautiful place in which we temporarily reside. To fund this life, we farm pot. But after all of these years, I have 20 plants total. Enough to get by. Any more than that, and you are tempting fate. People may say I'm a criminal, and yeah, but I live a life without greed, a life where I protect my family, every single one of them, even you, Peter. And if we allow greed to enter into our lives, then we've destroyed the very thing that we came out here for.
Why did you come here?
Salvation.
I'm telling you this to make you aware of the vast consequences of what you may or may not be involved in on this, your little summer sojourn in the woods.
Back at his den, Jack lights a joint, then produces a uniform button.
I found this on my land. The feds are here. Somebody has been sloppy. And now everything changes.
What does that mean? What are you gonna do?
Whatever I have to. So I'm gonna ask you one more time. How many plants does Max have?
Peter stares down.
Jack, you're not gonna believe it, but that goddamn deer ate up the rest of my roses. What are the two of you talking about?
Oh. Peter here is just indulging an old man as he prattles on about the world of physics.
Well, let's eat.
Woo! Jaddy!
Jack leaves Peter toying pensively with the button. Later, Peter's at the trailer.
I didn't know. I mean, why didn't you tell me?
Tell me again. What did you say to Jack?
I didn't say anything to Jack.
You didn't say anything to Jack?
I don't understand why.
You should have told me about the other patch.
I mean, I'm part of it, man. I was gonna tell you right around harvest, but apparently I'm glad I didn't because you would have fucking robbed me anyway, right?
Wow.
Fuck!
Wow, you never trusted anybody, man.
Shut up.
Max hides.
Where are the plants, Peter?
Peter's in an interrogation room and stares down blankly.
Your friend shouldn't have bought all that equipment in one place.
Fuck you!
Peter jumps when he hears the cursing. One of the interrogators gets up to close the door, then sits down again. Peter stares numbly at them. The sun beats down on a field of golden grass.
You know, we're lucky they let us go.
We didn't get what they needed. We didn't get the plants. That's why they let us go. Apparently, miraculously, you didn't tell them where they were, so they gave us a warning.
They amble through the field. Back at Jack's, set amongst lush green grass and forest, Peter sits on the toilet. He's deep in thought and talks to himself.
What are you doing?
He surfaces from his reverie and his expression brightens. Soft moonlight falls on Peter's face as he lies in bed asleep.
Who did you shoot?
Shh.
Jack's only wearing boots.
Quack, flash. What? Jack! Oh my God, he killed a fed.
It's so goddamn much noise. Why here?
It's a deer. Oh, you shot a deer.
Yes.
Twice. In the head. Wow.
The deer is hung upside down, and Jack, who grabbed a gown on his way out, slits the beast's belly open.
Oh. Why are you cleaning it now?
Because it's not deer season.
So?
If I leave it out, somebody will see it. It'll attract attention. That's not good, especially not now. And I'll shine the light so I can see.
Jack digs inside the carcass with his knife, pulls out something small and bloody, and holds it up. Jack cooks venison steaks on a barbecue in sunshine. Family and friends are relaxing in the Truman's leafy backyard. Peter comes out and solemnly surveys the scene of people eating and drinking. Some are sitting at a picnic table, others in chairs. A man in a bucket hat calls to him.
You gotta try some of this steak, Hadley.
Steak?
Jack's a master chef.
Peter does the barbecuing, while Max and Jack eat.
It's not steak. It's all in the preparation.
So how's things?
Good.
Is there anything you want to tell me?
The international dialing code for Antarctica. It's 672.
The feds are here, you know.
Max glances over at Peter, who doesn't look at the meat as he cooks it.
Anna,
I just want to make sure that there's no reason for them to stick around.
Are you going to be a father now, Jack?
Well, come on, Max. I can't help you. If you're going
to... Maybe Dr. Truman. Maybe the feds are here because they're really dying to get their hands over all that research you've been doing. Right? All that stuff you've been tooling over all these years, right, Jack? Maybe they're dying to get their fucking hands all over it.
Why do you always gotta be the little shit?
Max holds his gaze, then gets up from his chair and walks away. Jack lowers his eyes and looks concerned. Rosie, whose long red hair cascades from beneath her sun hat, notices Jack stomping back toward the house. She takes off the hat and shakes her head despondently.
Oh, Charlie. What are we going to do with him?
Who's Charlie?
Oh, Charlie's my first husband, Maxie's father.
Max's father? I thought Jack was...
No. We all came up here together. Charlie, Jack, and I. Charlie used to work with Jack at UCLA. They were friends. We were all friends. They made quite a pair, he and Jack. Charlie's philosophies and Jack's science. Except when they were drinking, which was, well, more than when they weren't. Charlie desperately wanted to quit. And when it got bad, Charlie would have these seizures where he needed a drink. And then he found some ecstasy from some of the kids out on the campground. It was the blue pill with the A on it, and it started off in Boston. It was wonderful stuff. And he started taking these pills instead of drinking, and for 2 months he stopped cold turkey. Jack couldn't believe it. He told me he did it. Charlie did it. We thought this place, the life we live, had saved him. And then one day Charlie was having one of these seizures, and he really needed a drink, and we didn't have any more of these pills left, and he's yelling at me to get him something, and I can't find anything. And then finally, I look in a drawer and I find a half tab of acid, which was really old. And I just said, just take it, Charlie. Just take it. It'll just take you to a different realm. And so he took it and went off. But after a while, he came back and he said, I don't know what the fuck you gave me. Every cell in my body is hurting. And I said, oh, no, let's go to the hospital. He said, no, I'm going to take a ride. He always liked to drive. It would calm him down. And so he left. And that night, 2 o'clock in the morning, something woke me up. It startled me to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, because I usually don't. And they said that's when he died. That's when he went over the cliff like Wile E. Coyote. I didn't know what to tell Max, so I just told him what Charlie always told him, not to take it all too seriously.
Later, we all went up to Charlie's favorite spot, looking out over the cove. Jack, Maxie, and me. I was so furious, and I stood there, and I said, all right, Charlie, I want something spectacular. Spectacular, spectacular. You got it? And Jack said, well, the sun is setting, and I said, well, let's begin. And as soon as I said, let's begin, we looked down at the cove, and there was this storm that just showed up from nowhere. And we went, what is that? Where did that come from? And all of a sudden, there was this little spark and these 50-mile-an-hour winds. And as it was growing, it had these fists coming from it, coming up the hill, like that.
She demonstrates, raising her fists.
I was going, I was screaming. My hair is just going straight up, and I just know this is Charlie. And then the storm just cleared, just like that. And a lot of shit happens in your life, changes, and you find yourself standing outside at a cliff going, well, okay, now what?
Peter listens with a sympathetic expression.
Now I'd like to have some venison.
She walks off, leaving Peter looking shocked. Peter's at Max's.
Come back to L.A. with me.
Yeah.
I'm not joking. Seriously, why not? A clean start. You can bring charity. Just start over, man.
It could be cool. Get married, you and I. Dinner parties. We could join a gym.
Yeah, we could join a gym.
Mm. You sure?
No more.
Max is holding out a joint to him.
I mean, what do you... You can't actually keep doing this. Max.
Max is sitting cross-legged on the ground and takes a toke of his joint.
Oh, I'm out.
No, you're not.
Max, this is... I can't be part of this anymore. It's gone way too far.
Pete, this isn't just summer vacation, okay, man? It's too late to go home. It's too late.
This is not a fucking game!
Max thumps his truck.
I see, just another hopeless, pathetic case. One of Bogart's parasitic fucks. You know that, Pete? Something goes wrong and the good doctor's right out the door?
I'm pathetic. You're a pot farmer, Max. I achieve more in a given week than you have in your entire life.
Peter stares him in the eye for a long moment, then walks off. Max looks shaken and deflated as he watches him go.
Peter! Pete!
Peter stops near the edge of the road, stands still, then turns to look at Max.
If I don't pull this off, Charity's gonna end up just like me.
Max smiles weakly through his tears and returns Peter's grave stare with a pleading look. Peter considers, then shakes his head and with a hint of regret and hesitation, tramps away along the road. Sunlight falls across Max's sad face as he watches him go. Peter's sitting with his back to a tree, staring down glumly, but looks up when he hears footsteps approach. It's Charity, who peers through a fork in a tree trunk, then turns and looks at Peter.
We're playing hide and seek?
Oh.
Why are you so sad?
Do you ever think about what you want to be when you grow up?
An astronaut. How about you?
He's tearful.
I don't know.
That's okay.
You think so? You think that's really okay? It feels more like a waste.
Charity watches him intently as he looks away, fighting his emotions, then a tear trickles down his cheek.
Charity, I see you!
Oh, I ruined your hiding place.
He smiles gently as she stands beside a huge tree trunk, still watching him. At the house, Jack opens his eyes wide without blinking and tilts his head. Charity sits across from him, trying not to laugh. He puffs on a joint and blows out a smoke ring, which drifts into her face and she smiles.
Grandpa Jack wins again.
No.
Yes.
No. It's not fair. You cheated.
Peter's sitting listlessly on a couch and gets up to go outside.
Dad.
Peter.
How did you get here?
Star 69 and MapQuest.
Jack, Charity, and Rosie come out to join Peter. Back inside, Jack smokes a joint while they sit round the kitchen table with mugs in front of them.
So, Mr. Truman, what is it that you do?
I farm pot.
I'm sorry?
Of course you are. What is it that you do?
I'm a physician and a professor of medicine at the University of California, Los Angeles.
Oh, that's wonderful. Jack and I are looking for a doctor. We need a new prescription for medical marijuana. I know it might be a bit forward given the circumstances, but I'm thinking since you're here, it would legalize us somewhat. It would be very helpful.
No.
You know, I used to be a professor at UCLA.
Were you? And what is it that made you leave and move into the woods?
Well, I didn't want to compromise my soul.
Peter's dad refuses the joint.
All right, I think I've heard enough. Mr. and Mrs. Truman. We're going. Peter
remains at the table and hangs his head for a moment, then looks tearfully at the Trumans.
Peter.
He gets up and follows his dad, who opens the door for him. Peter steps out with his head bowed, and Prof. Hadley closes the door as they leave. Peter drives glumly.
I bought you a pod.
What?
You know, those digital music players. I bought you one.
I've already got one.
Turn it, get something else then.
Okay.
They're framed in the windshield.
I went ahead and asked you.
What?
Your final course, I asked you. Your residency starts in 2 weeks.
A car, then a truck hurtled toward them.
Jesus!
Max?
Do you know these people?
Oh, shit.
A Fed chopper.
Peter, what are you doing?
Just head downhill. I'll meet you at the beach.
What? Just go to the beach. Peter, goddammit!
Ow!
Jack, Rosie, and Charity run out the house, and Max hurries to get his rifle from his trailer. surf rolls into the long empty beach, where locals are arriving in their cars. A woman canters around on a horse, and Jack steps onto rocks to look out. Steve and Bob are among the crowd. A woman takes a picnic chair out of her car trunk.
Hey, would you grab me one too?
Jack takes a toke of Rosie's joint, then runs to Steve and Bob.
Hey, Jack, what's up?
Yeah. Cool.
Either of you seen Max?
Jack!
Pete's dad calls out to Jack. In forest, Max grunts as he scrabbles up a slope and pauses to look at the chopper above. Fed operatives move through undergrowth. At the beach, Pete's dad calls out.
Maybe I should go with you, Jack.
Not a good idea.
Jack gets into his pickup and drives off. Max arrives at his pot patch, hears a noise and aims his rifle. Peter appears.
Grab a bag.
Come on!
At the beach, people sit drinking and smoking. Rosie shares a joint with an elderly woman who draws on it, then passes it to Pete's dad. He doesn't have any, and a boy takes it off him. At Max's patch, he and Peter are frantically hacking down pot. Max attaches a large plastic sack of it to a rope and sends it away on a pulley. Fed agents are trekking through forest toward them. Max and Peter take cover behind a tree as the agents move swiftly through undergrowth. Max stands to check around. Jack runs up and pushes him into a gully, and Peter dives in after them. Agents arrive above them and start hacking down the pot.
I'm not leaving.
They will kill you. You won't get to. You don't get to do that.
Jack and Peter hold Max down. As some of the agents continue hacking at plants, the chopper heads away into clear blue sky. On the beach, Max is carrying Charity. Her arms are wrapped around his neck and her head is buried against his shoulder as she sleeps. Beside them, Rosie slides off Max's beanie hat, kisses his head, then puts the hat back on him. Peter walks up to Max and looks at him sheepishly.
So we're gonna go stay at a motel. I'll stop by in the morning before we go.
Max closes his eyes and nuzzles Charity.
I'm sorry about everything, Max.
Max rests his chin on Charity's shoulder and smiles.
Don't take it so seriously.
Max walks away and Peter hangs his head. Max, Steve, and Bob are drinking in the lager bar at night, and they all take swigs of their drinks. Max is surrounded by shot glasses and bottles, and is sitting blearily at the bar with his friends. He picks up a beer bottle, and with a sudden flick of his wrist ejects a stream of beer across the bar as he speaks to the bartender.
You got any more in there?
Jesus, Max.
Sorry, no. What's that?
I guess a lifetime ban means I'll see you tomorrow, right, Tommy?
Go get some sleep, Max.
Fuck you, Tommy.
Max shambles off. He's now in his truck, driving haphazardly as he holds a joint in one hand and licks the paper to seal it. He puts it in his mouth, but it drops into his lap.
Fuck.
The truck lights weave around the road. At the Trumans, Rosie opens the front door and is met by a sunny day and a young cop standing awkwardly on the porch.
Oh,
Rosie doubles up as she weeps, and Jack picks up Charity. The officer remains in the doorway and looks solemn. At the motel, Peter is about to brush his teeth. The screen goes black. Fluffy white clouds hang over the field of tall golden grass, and in the forest, sunlight glints through a leafy canopy. Jack and Rosie's house stands in dappled light coming through the surrounding trees. Inside, Charity tips the contents of a metal box into a large plastic jar. She screws on the lid, then lifts the jar and kisses it. On the side is a homemade yellow label with flowers drawn on it, and the words, Max the Truman.
Love you, Daddy.
She gently touches the lid of the ashes jar and leaves it on the kitchen table. At the beach, the sun illuminates a strip of water so brightly it looks white hot. Colorful prayer flags flap on poles that have been stuck in the sand. A small group of people is gathered by the flags. They watch as Rosie, who's wearing bright colors, holds Charity's hand and runs with her. They stop at the water's edge and Charity holds out Max's ashes jar to her. Among the mourners are Steve, Bob, and Peter. Jack, who's normally scruffy, is smartly dressed and, along with the others, watches Rosie and Charity each take a handful of the ashes and cast them over the water. Everyone remains staring out to sea. Jack is tearful, and Rosie looks out sadly from beneath the wide ruched brim of her straw hat. Peter swallows hard and fights his emotions. Rolling sea crashes against rocks. On the sunny beach, the young cop talks to one of the other mourners, and Rosie walks off holding Charity's hand. Jack's standing alone, head bowed and hands in his pockets. Peter's father is at the water's edge. Peter joins his father, and they look at each other awkwardly.
It's really something, this place.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, isn't it?
A prayer flag behind them flutters in the breeze. They stand with their hands in their trouser pockets and don't look at each other.
Listen, Dad.
They look at each other.
I love you.
Me too.
I'm not taking that residency.
His dad pats him gently.
We'll see.
His father looks away again and sticks his hand back in his pocket. Peter stares at him indignantly. At the house, there's a knock on Jack's den door.
Hey, Jack, we're gonna take off. Jack?
It was my idea to come here. I was the one who convinced Charlie to come here.
God, you stupid! Jack. What is this? This fucking bullshit!
Jack!
Goddamn no! 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 No, 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 I got nothing. I got nothing. I got nothing.
No, that's
not
true.
Nothing. Listen,
you've got so much. You've got Rosie counting on you. You've got Charity. You've got Bogart. You've got this place, this beautiful place that can bring people back to life.
Peter smiles tearfully.
Come on, Jack. You haven't passed the event horizon yet.
Jack smiles, and Peter gently lays a hand on his cheek.
It's okay.
Peter, Peter,
yes, 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 you are good, you are good.
Outside the house, Rosie caresses Peter's cheek, then he and Jack hug tightly.
Tell Bogart thanks. Hey.
Peter crouches in front of Charity and motions, come here. Crouched in front of him, she wraps her arms around his neck. They have an emotional hug, then Peter kisses her head and stands up. He lowers his eyes and walks away. Charity runs off with her head bowed, and Jack waves as Peter and his father drive away. Later, Peter and his dad are in a diner. Peter stares miserably out the window at trees in sunshine, then takes a sip of milk. His father, who's busy reading a newspaper, glances up when a bus pulls up outside. A woman gets off and hurries toward the diner. Dad continues reading, ignoring Peter, who sits staring at him. After a moment, Peter moves away from the window and slides to the end of the banquette seat he's on.
You all right?
I'm fine.
He gets up and walks away, and his dad absorbs himself in his newspaper again. Peter walks out to the bus and stands by the open door. He looks back glumly at his father, who's oblivious to him leaving, then turns and talks to the driver. Wearing only a shirt and trousers and with no luggage, Peter gets on the bus. His dad takes a sip from his mug and hardly takes his eyes off his newspaper. The woman who got off the bus leaves the diner and heads back out to it. The automatic door closes, and the bus pulls away slowly. Peter's dad is still completely unaware as he continues reading the paper which is laid on the table. On board the bus, Peter's profile shows against a blur of foliage outside. His eyes are fixed ahead and he looks sad. His eyes gradually close, and he drifts off to sleep. The screen goes black. The end appears in white letters. In the diner, a waitress brings Peter's and his dad's food.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Written and directed by Darren Grodsky and Danny Jacobs.
Call in the airstrike, tell them to make the drop.
Produced by Jason Weiss.
Initiate a cycle. No one but you can stop.
Still unconcerned by Peter's absence, Dad tucks into his food and reads his paper, which is folded in half on the table.
You're in love with love. And is that enough?
Peter's partly drunk glass of milk is beside his plate of food.
I bet you feel really potent stuff.
Dad only glances up from his paper when the waitress passes.
The shadows of doubt on how things turn out are typically gray. But even the stop clock on the wall.
As Dad daps his mouth with a napkin, he notes a guy passing and casts a fleeting inquisitive look over his shoulder in the direction Peter went.
Just how much distance means we're.
Calm, and still engrossed in reading, Dad eats a fry. Executive producer, Todd Centuria. Original music, Isler. Embark Productions presents Humboldt County. It's cool. It's something we ain't seen before. In an unaccustomed break from his paper, Dad picks up a sandwich and bites into it. The screen fades to black as he returns to reading. Show us the things we can afford. Cast in order of appearance. Peter, Jeremy Strong. Bogart, Feruza Bach. Professor Hadley, Peter Bogdanovich. Sandra, Vicky Monroe. Medical student, Tarek Zodi. Man in bathroom, Lawrence Bridges. Jazz club bassist, John Murdoch. Jazz club pianist, Lenny Pettinelli. Jazz club drummer, B. Swizzlow. Like Jack, Brad Dourif. Rosie, Francis Conroy. Charity, Madison Davenport. Max, Chris Messina. Earl, Jeffrey Lizard Robinson. Bob, Darren Grodsky. Steve, Danny Jacobs. All the pieces no one wants to know. Store clerk, Raylene Rhodes. Store patron, Suzanne Hendry. Zelda, Elaine Taylor. Townies at the Truman House, Tootie Bowl, Marnie Friedman, Ed Marltet. Lucy, Michelle Shoshani. Tom, Rick St. Charles. Sophie, Bethany Therese. Frank the Lodger, Tom Conlon. Eddie the Lodger, Jerry Droz. Mike the Lodger, Isaac Musgoffian. Harry, Roy Marin. Agent Gallant, Jabari Morgan. Agent Weiss, Julia Oliveira. Beach Pot Smokers, Tootie Bowl, Jonathan Buddha Usery, Robert Wells. It doesn't matter, you tell me why we don't. Teen Beach Pot Smoker, Brandon Burke Martin. Deputy Dirksen, Nathan Pierce. Diner Waitress, Terry Fleshman. Bus Driver, William Carlson. Bus Passenger, Isora Burns. Music includes I Want You to Be My Baby, composed by John Hendricks, performed by Feruza Bach. Happy Alone, written by Ariana Murray and Aaron Espinoza, performed by Erlemart. From the Bottom Up, written by Dana Kurtz, performed by Dana Kurtz. Noza Doza, written by Phil Eisler, performed by Isler. Doesn't matter all the way in what you wait and fall. No Other Love But You, music by Paul Bessenbacher and Matt Bowen. Performed by Francis Conroy. Welcome Home, written by Ben Cooper. Performed by Radical Face from the album Ghost. With you, we've all been meaning to thank you. Paid, written by Edward C. Daly and Billy Joe Bowers, performed by the Super Suckers. Forsage, HRG and ITG. Magnolia Pictures.